This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When passions flared recently over pupil assignments for Butler and Independence High Schools, we shouldn't have been surprised. Parents have always been passionate about the schools their children attend, particularly when things change and disrupt a school career or future plans. In a school district the size of Charlotte-Mecklenburg, you have to draw the lines of demarcation somewhere. It will always be the case that someone on one side of a street might be in one school's footprint while friends on the other side of the street are assigned to a different school. And when a system grows because the population has grown or spread in new directions, when new schools open to handle the load, changes have to be made. But the fact that it just has to be that way doesn't make things any easier. Today, a conversation with the man who knows both sides of that equation all too well. Scott McCulley is the Executive Director of Planning and Student Placement for CMS, a system with 176 schools and more than 133,000 students. Thank you for being here this morning. You're a brave man.
Thanks, Mike, for having me.
And evidently a busy one.
Absolutely.
We're going to talk this hour about how assignment decisions are made and what parents can expect in the future. And I'm sure folks will want to join the conversation as we go through the program. So, 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks for every other way imaginable. There seems to have been a rash of discontent over pupil assignment and reassignment just through the summer and into this fall. And you have been the Executive Director of Planning and Student Placement since 2000 at CMS.
That's correct, yes.
Is this year's unrest greater than, about equal to, or par for the course in terms of what you've been through in the last 9 years?
Sure. I think for the most part, this is par for the course. This is a very, very passionate issue, as you described earlier. I think what has made this a little bit unusual is that we've drawn attendance boundaries for two high schools, and that typically brings more passion because it impacts more students. We're also looking at a boundary for a well-established school in the center of our community that needs relief. And students have been assigned to that school for many, many years. It's a boundary change that is necessitated by the growth in the area that is not as a result of a new school going into that area. And so certainly I think there's more passion as it relates to that particular issue as well.
Be specific. That school is what?
Yeah, that school is Eastover, Eastover Elementary, and we have seen growth over the past 3 years in the actual attendance area, growth from just CMS students of about 200 students. So we are at the point of overcapacity in the school. We are at a point where we need to do something for next year, for the 2010-11 school year.
We have been growing. This city has been growing by leaps and bounds over the past 8 and 10 years, and I've forgotten the exact number, but I know that we had many conversations in the last several years with school people and financial people and school board officials and county commissioners about not being able to keep up with the growth, that it would be impossible to build enough schools to keep up with the growth. I think the number was 3 or 4 schools per year had to be built. Well, now the recession has hit. The growth has decreased by some measures,
right?
And it's not as fast as it was. So if this recession had not hit, would things be more critical than they are right now? Would you be talking more about more sweeping changes than you are right now?
Well, absolutely. We would have had the opportunity to build more schools, and actually, right now, our construction program is put on hold just because of the cash flow issues with the county. So we would have the opportunity to be drawing more attendance areas because more schools would be opening. Certainly since 2000, we've grown by about 35,000 students. Currently we have about 20,000 students in mobile units. Mobile units have unfortunately been just kind of a fact of life in CMS, and as we continue to grow, we'll have some element of mobile units.
You know, given that you do use mobile units in these schools that are facing overcrowding and you're facing political problems and parental pushback on redrawing the boundaries, why not just add more mobile classrooms to take care of the load?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a good question. Certainly our schools are designed for a certain number of students. And that would be that would impact the width of the hallways, for an example.
Right.
It impacts the cafeteria and media centers. So as we add more and more students to mobile units, and typically those are adjacent, immediately adjacent to the school, that impacts the infrastructure, the core infrastructure of that school. We were at Eastover the other day, and they were starting lunch at 10:30. It could have started earlier than that. And when you have appropriate sized schools based off of the core number of classrooms, you can best use those facilities such as your cafeteria, media center, and all the other classrooms that go into
that. What time does class start? If you have lunch at 10:30, when's your first class?
Yeah, actually, I believe the start for that school is around 8 o'clock. I need to check on that to be sure. But you're going to be jumping into lunch pretty quick. Yeah. That's absolutely correct.
You said recently that CMS is experiencing bigger than expected decline in center city enrollment, mm-hmm. but bigger gains in the affluent suburbs. You're 8% under in the inner city or the center city and 8% over in the suburbs. How is that impacting the system? Is that part and parcel of the ruckus we've been reading about in the paper?
Right. Well, and that's based off of our projection that we had for this school year, and we broke that out by learning community. I think that's a good representation of the geographic distribution throughout our community. So that's really a comparison between actual and projected. Our central learning community saw the greatest decline from projected. Our south learning community saw the greatest increase over projected enrollment. Mm-hmm. And please keep in mind, we were a little bit off on our projection. We were just around 800 students off that projection, a little bit lower. So you certainly could expect, the central and some of those areas to be off as well. Our central has the most magnet programs in it as well. Those have been very stable over the years and continue to be. They also have schools that could be impacted significantly by a downturn in the community that would typically bring workers to Charlotte that would certainly bring their students to CMS schools. And in the South, we know that we have seen a little bit of students coming back from private parochial schools. That's very mm-hmm. anecdotal. But that certainly hasn't been a significant factor.
Although you thought it would be.
We thought it would be at one time. We thought it would be. That has not, again, that hasn't been a significant factor, although anecdotally we were certainly aware of many families that are coming back for financial reasons.
Now, you've been there for 9 years, as I said, and in your time you have implemented a new student assignment plan in 2002 and 2003. You completed a review of that plan and made adjustments to it and developed attendance boundaries for 20 new schools in the last 9 years. So let's talk about how you and those around you do what you do. It strikes me as being Byzantine, but about how you determine who goes to what school.
Sure.
How does the district and how often does the district draw and redraw lines of demarcation
okay.
for schools?
Well, this has turned into an annual process, and we've kind of adjusted that within the calendar. Our high schools, we like to start that earlier. We like to give more time for public input and board deliberation on high schools. With some of our elementaries, we started that in the fall, which is what we're doing now, for impact for the next school year, for the 2010-11 school year. We start out certainly at the staff level, and the way we've done this is we spend quite a bit of time, and we have a geographic information system, a computerized system that tells us where all of our students live. And we come up with some options, with some boundary options. We do have some basic guiding principles. The board adopted in March of 2005. Those are very broad in nature. But we do come up with a variety of options. And for the most part, what we're looking for is utilizing our facilities. How best can we utilize our facilities, particularly when we build a new school? What kind of schools are impacted by that, and how best can we fill that new school?
But at some point, you have to put a pen to a map. A pencil to a map and draw a line on that map. And these are the boundaries for this middle school and this elementary school, and these schools will feed into this
right.
high school, and these are the boundaries for that high school.
How do we get started?
Where do you begin?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we use the elementary attendance boundaries as the building blocks. So if we have a new middle school or particularly when we have a new high school, we like to use those elementary, current elementary boundaries as the building blocks. We try to make those feeders sync as closely as possible. Now, obviously, when we have an elementary school, new elementary school, we're going to have to divide some of those elementary school zones. That's obvious. And so we try to use, major points of geographic distribution, such as major roads, or if there's creeks or streams or any other major barriers, those are things that we look at. We do have access to the parcel maps provided by Mecklenburg County. And so we are able to use the parcel information. We use backs of lot lines. We try to use those current lines as much as possible in creating these boundaries. And again, it really comes to an exercise of how best can we draw a boundary that best utilizes our facility.
Is it people is it you and the people you work with and the computer system, or is there input from other sources such as parents?
Absolutely.
Or administrators of schools, et cetera?
Sure. Just to carry out the process, staff creates two or three options per boundary. We then schedule a series of public engagement meetings, and that's actually what we're in the middle of right now. We take these two or three options, we put them on our website so our public can get an opportunity to see those. Mm-hmm. We take those to a community meeting. We actually have a little different process in that we have them sit at tables. We provide them with maps. We provide them with some basic questions. But more importantly, we provide them with an opportunity for feedback and input. We also serve as an important resource to answer those very critical questions that parents have as well during those public meetings.
Have your initial plans been altered as
Absolutely.
A direct result of input from
Absolutely.
Parents?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And actually what we do after we go through the public engagement process, we typically have two meetings. They're exactly the same in terms of format.
Mm-hmm.
Frequently, parents come to both meetings, and that's perfectly fine. After those two meetings, what we do is we create some community options, and we try to create those boundaries off of common themes that we hear. We're not able to obviously create a boundary for every single piece of input, but we do try to string together some common themes. And so we may have one or two or possibly three community options for that given boundary. Post those on our website to get feedback on those as well.
The news tends to focus in on the heat, and so we're getting a lot of heat in the reports of the meetings that you have been holding recently over pupil assignment and redrawing the lines. But when parents come to these meetings and you put the maps in front of them and they say, okay, here are the parameters, here are the maps, you draw the lines, or where do you think this line ought to go, do they begin to see the depth of the complexity of the problem here? Do they change their initial, do their passions cool a little bit when they understand what you're up against?
Right. I think so. And some parents, that's definitely the case. We've had to kind of depart from that last week. Mm-hmm. We were a little unsure how many parents were going to show up, so we went to the auditorium style. We are going back this week to our what we call our tabletop method, where we do directly involve parents. The real advantage for that is I, as well as my staff, get to go around and talk to groups in a lot of depth and answer those questions.
Scott McCulley is Executive Director of Planning and Student Placement for Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools. We're talking about how they do what they do and what's going on right now as they do what they do. And we'll continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is made possible in part by Downtown Waynesville, presenting the Church Street Art and Craft Show. Over 120 juried artists, crafters, musicians, and food vendors. The 26th annual Church Street Art and Craft Show is Saturday, October the 10th on Main Street in Waynesville. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, Chris Clackham will be in to talk about the 56 signers of the nation's birth certificate, the Declaration of Independence. Much of what we think we know about those brave gentlemen, we don't really know. There's a lot of old wives' tales out there, urban myths out there, and he will uncover some of them for you tomorrow morning at 9. And then tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, you're all invited to join a conversation with the two mayoral candidates, Democrat Anthony Fox and Republican John Lasseter. We're recording a conversation that will air here Thursday morning at 9 at Dana Auditorium at Queen's University. That's tomorrow evening at 7. Hope to see you there.
Recent deadly attacks on U.S. troops in Afghanistan ratchet up pressure on President Obama. The ongoing debate among military strategists and the administration over what to do about Afghanistan. The Diane Rehm Show, Tuesday.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on Listener Funded, 90.7 FM, WFAE, your NPR news source.
We're back at Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Scott McCulley is the Executive Director of Planning and Student Placement for Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, and we're talking about the process of drawing school boundaries and deciding who goes to what school, an endeavor that they're engaged in right now. And if you've been following it in the news, there are some people who are actively upset by some of the suggestions that have not been finalized yet, as I understand it. They're still in flux, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. These are options at this point. Mm-hmm. There is no staff recommendation. So okay. We're hearing from the public.
The boundary lines that are currently in place, for the most part, were those that were put in place in 2002, 2003 by this pupil reassignment plan that came about as the result of, I believe, the court order to stop busing for the purposes of desegregation?
Yeah, absolutely. And I call it the modern era of mm-hmm. our student assignment plan, which began in the 2002-2003 school year. I mm-hmm. think back then we called it the family choice plan.
Mm-hmm.
We had some non-magnet choices as well as magnet options as well.
And is that when Charlotte Mecklenburg decided to promise people that there would be home schools, neighborhood schools essentially?
Right. Neighborhood schools close to home. We did away with the satellite zones at that point so that all zones were contiguous and no one was bussed across.
Were people happier prior to this plan, or are they happier after this plan went into effect, do you think?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I think that a lot has happened over the last 10 years. We have had, obviously, a lot of individuals come into the community that are brand new to the community and don't have
no history.
The history of the area, and they have a much different experience from where they have come. If they've come from much smaller school districts mm-hmm. for which there was one elementary, middle, or high school, our district can sometimes be a little bit intimidating in terms of the options.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to continually educate and provide information about what we do offer in terms of magnet options and magnet choices to families.
How big is this school system when you compare it to other school systems around the country? Are we one of the largest school systems?
We are one of the largest. We kind of fluctuate between the 19th and the 20th largest mm-hmm. in the country.
How do we compare in terms of size of the city versus size of the system?
Yeah, and certainly the size of the city continually changes with annexations and so forth. I think the city right now is about 700,000, somewhere in that range. We're at 134,000, but we're a countywide school system. We serve every student in Mecklenburg County. The county population, obviously, is much larger than that.
I know you weren't here much before the modern era. You came 2 years before the modern
right.
era. But during the old era, the busing to achieve integration era, which was court-ordered at the time, were the changes of school boundaries fewer and more far between than they are today? Are we doing it more frequently today than we did it back then, or is it about the same?
Well, I think today we are more aggressive in terms of providing new facilities to accommodate the growth. You got to understand, in Mecklenburg County, there was a period of time where we had no growth to very slow growth
right.
In the 90s, and our building program was not as aggressive as it is today, and it needs to be in order to accommodate the growth and the facilities needs that our students require.
So we have 103, correct me if I'm wrong, elementary schools, 33 middle schools, and 31 high schools.
That's correct.
And we're about to add a new high school.
So actually, two new high schools.
Okay.
One in the north and one in the east.
So given that inverted pyramid where we have a lot of elementary schools, much fewer middle schools, and fewer high schools still, although it's about to become even, given that inverted pyramid and the growth and the movement patterns of the population, how often do decisions about feeder schools and their boundaries have to be made and changed?
Well, typically when we do a boundary for a new school, whether it's elementary, middle, and high, we're very cognizant of where that elementary, if it's a new elementary school, feeds to middle and high. And the same is true for both middle and high school students. So we're aware of that. Every time we make a boundary change, we're in the process of evaluating what that feed is. Now, for magnet programs, we have typically looked at those feeds on about every three-year basis, starting in 2002. We had another review in 2006. We just went through a fairly significant review just last fall. So there certainly is a schedule for that as well.
Growth has been ongoing for the past decade here. We know how serious the growth has been, how dramatic the growth has been. And it takes several years to bring a new school online. It just doesn't happen over. You don't say one day, one spring, you know, we're going to need a school here next year and build it over the summer. It takes years. So this furor that we've been reading about is a result of announced plans to deal with these growth patterns and with these new schools coming online. But surely it could not have been a surprise that changes would have to be made. And we saw the need for those changes coming 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, right?
Right, absolutely. And certainly the bonds that were approved to build the new schools, the two new high schools I just referred to, that was, you know, a couple years ago, several years ago. And actually, it is kind of interesting that you brought that up. We do have parents that are aware when new high schools are being built, and they start calling our office very early, sometimes a year or two prior to when we're actually ready to start to develop the boundaries. Mm-hmm. So parents, I think
Are they making comments or are they asking questions?
Absolutely. They're asking questions. They're making comments. Again, we may be a year or two off from actually starting that process of developing that boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we listen to what they have to say. We're interested in what they have to say because they're obviously, they live in the area. They can provide information.
And they're paying for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. CMS assignment policy states that the student assignment plan must provide our students and families with stability and predictability to the extent possible. And obviously, lots of people buy homes and decide where they want to live in the city based on where they believe and where they want their children to end up going to school. And when that doesn't happen, because you have to redraw the lines and suddenly they find themselves going to a different school than they thought they were going to, when they could have easily moved, perhaps, to that other neighborhood, mm-hmm. That makes people upset. Is that what's happening here to a certain extent?
Well, to a certain extent, that's true. You know, clearly, when we add new schools, we have to develop new boundaries, and that's going to impact maybe two or three different boundary lines, different schools. So when you're in a growing school district, which is a good thing, growth is good in a lot of respects, that's one of the necessary effects of growth is changing boundaries.
Mm-hmm. But do we do, in other words, people really do, buying a house is a long-term decision,
right.
And particularly now when many people can't sell their homes. Have we been changing the rules or the guidelines or the boundary lines more often than the average school system so that people really can't make plans that they can depend on?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think our school district is in line with other school districts that build schools and need to adjust boundary lines. It's one of those, again, one of those effects that occurs with growth. You know, in the instance of Eastover, we have obviously a very stable area. It's been there for a long, long time. The boundary has been the same for many years. And it's just come to the point where we've had to make a change because of growth in the area. And that is for a variety of reasons, most likely because we've got new families coming into the area.
Well, this concept of home schools, where I'm not sure that I understand the concept particularly, but it's a neighborhood school.
Sure.
That everybody would have access to their neighborhood school unless they wanted to go to a magnet program, correct?
That's correct.
Is that really realistic, given the growth patterns that we have in the city and the population map? Is it possible to guarantee everybody attendance at a conveniently located neighborhood school?
Well, I think, you know, certainly we can provide a homeschool guarantee, and I think overall, our district is very stable in terms of our boundary lines. And I know that certainly may not seem to be the case when we add new schools, but if you look at the number of students that are actually impacted by that and compare that to the entire, you know, student enrollment, I think we would find that to be, you know, relatively small compared to the entire total population. We are sensitive, however, to come back to your point about stability. And so when we go in and we draw boundaries, that's certainly something that we look at. We don't go and redraw boundaries for an entire half of the county when maybe touching a few attendance boundaries is necessary in order to fill the school. So certainly that's a very sensitive point with our community, and we recognize that.
When the school system realizes they're going to have to rebalance the student population, or they're going to bring a new school online and they have to fill that school with somebody, how long before that school opens, or before those mm-hmm. those both populations are shifted, how long do you start working on the redistribution process, and at what point are parents involved
okay.
in that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for an example, we started working on the boundaries for the new high schools. They're going online for 2010-11 in January of this calendar year. So nearly 10 months ago, we started on this process. We involved the community in March with the public engagement meetings. We presented to the board in May a staff recommendation, with the board voting June 9th. Now, with the new Mint Hill High School, that was extended a bit for 2 months to get more public input and for the board to learn more about the boundaries in that area. It wasn't until the August 11th meeting that those boundaries were approved. Now, mm-hmm. again, this isn't for the current year, 2009-10, but for 10-11. So in that particular situation, the community has more than one school year notification in terms of what those boundaries are going to be.
I really have not been following this because it doesn't matter to me personally, but I went back and read a lot of the stories about what's been going on over the summer, particularly with Mint Hill Butler Independence, that whole
right.
thing.
Sure.
Let me summarize, and you tell me if I've got this right. Back in June, the controversy over zoning for this new Mint Hill High School erupted. The board had decided to equally divide attendance in that area among Butler Independence and the currently under construction Mint Hill High School, which will open, what, in 2010?
That's correct.
But Mint Hill residents did not like the plan that you had come up with, and they came up with one of their own that put teenagers in their area, in the Mint Hill area, into the new Mint Hill High School, which to me makes sense. It is the new Mint Hill High School. Why shouldn't kids from Mint Hill go there? The board put off a decision till August. And when they announced their decision, it was to assign most of the Mint Hill area students to Independence High School instead of the new Mint Hill School. And that went against the Mint Hill parents' wishes. That would have made the school, according to the Observer at least, almost exclusively theirs. Am I right so far?
Well, first of all, the name.
Whatever the school is going to be called.
Yeah, and that's a pseudo name. That is yeah. actually a temporary name that we give it. We could have called the school, you know,
Fred.
Anything for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, School on Twilight Drive or
but it was
East
built,
High School.
But it was built to – why was it built?
Okay. Let's get back to that. And we look at this more from a regional standpoint. The school was built to relieve Independence, Butler, and East Mecklenburg High School. And this was a unique situation in that we had a tremendous amount of growth in this area, a tremendous amount of need for relief in those three high schools. There were a number of different options, a number of different plans that staff drew up. And frankly, there were a number that could work very, very well mm-hmm. in terms of how they were developed. If you recall the initial staff recommendation that was presented to the board, you know, basically divided the Mint Hill community, but in a way, provided good utilization across all of those schools just mentioned. The board wanted to go back and look at a little different kind of plan, certainly fine with that. So they opted for a little different plan that indeed sent all of Mint Hill residents to one school, that being Independence High School.
Mm-hmm. Is this new high school, where is it physically located?
Well, it's physically located, again, on Twilight Drive, and that's just on the other side of the 485 interstate. It is technically in Mint Hill mm-hmm. within the boundary, but mm-hmm. it's right on the line just within
but
the town limit.
But physically, it will be the closest high school to Mint Hill.
Well, in terms of two high schools, we have Independence and this new school, and I would say they are equally distant, okay, close to the population. And one could even argue, if you look at an aerial, that Independence High School is actually closer to the population nucleus of that area.
So this does fit in with the policy that says every student will be guaranteed a seat in the school close to home.
Close to home.
And that there will be no capping of schools for students within the homeschool areas.
Right.
And that homeschooled zones will be logically drawn. In your view, this works to fit all of that criteria.
Absolutely.
So the reason these parents wanted everybody from Mint Hill to go to this new high school because it was new?
Well, I think that there was certainly an effort that they wanted to support their town, that being Mint Hill, mm-hmm, and all the residents in their town in wanting an assignment to one high school. And certainly that's a possibility in this particular scenario. And so, we attempted to accommodate that, as well as looking at the utilization of capacity of all the schools, and we were able to do that.
And because some believe that the and I guess the school board is involved in this as well as your board.
Absolutely.
That the school board wanted to send a message, or at least wanted to make sure that granting the parents' request, the Mint Hill parents' request, would not set a precedent that would start parents submitting assignment boundaries to CMS so that, mm-hmm, they would have their own schools in their own neighborhoods.
Well, and I certainly can't comment on the intent of the board. I will say that we welcome comments. We've welcomed comments on the Eastover situation as well as the continued discussion on Myers Park and East Mac, and I do recognize that they're very heated and passionate,
yeah,
but that's our job,
right,
to stand and receive those.
Well, let's
comments.
Talk a moment about those two schools, Myers Park and East Mech. These are usually among the county's highest performing schools. Myers Park is among the most popular high school in the system. Myers Park is overcrowded, and there was a proposal on the table at one point to redraw the lines around it in such a way that it would affect both of those schools.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, Myers Park has been left pretty much intact, as I understand it. What is the situation,
okay,
at these two schools in terms of numbers?
Sure. Well, first of all, let's take it back a step and look at the bigger picture in terms of what has brought us to this point. When we brought boundaries to the board initially in June, we targeted some impact areas, and we did not target Myers Park as a part of that process initially. We had East Mech, Independence, Butler as our targeted attendance boundaries for impact. Again, Myers Park was not a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
The board honored that, and as a part of the August 11th motion, they basically directed staff to go back and look at some ways that we could move some students from Myers Park to East Mech and come back with a recommendation for impact for the 2010-11 school year. So that's where we're at right now in the process of that.
And that's where we'll have to stop for the time being. We'll come back to more questions about Myers Park and Eastover and Mint Hill and all those good things in a second. Scott McCulley with CMS. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is made possible in part by Brothers Air Heat and Plumbing, offering full furnace service to maintain performance through the winter months. Just ask your neighbor, Brothers Air Heat and Plumbing, at 877-713-HVAC or brotherair.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, recent deadly attacks on U.S. troops in Afghanistan ratchet up pressure on President Obama, the ongoing debate among military strategists and the administration over what to do about Afghanistan. That's coming up in about 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show. And a reminder that you're invited to join us tomorrow evening for a conversation with our two mayoral candidates at Dana Auditorium on the campus of Queen's University of Charlotte at 7 o'clock. That program will air Thursday morning here at 9. And if you'd like to join our conversation about the schools, now's the time. 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, which is 9323, or wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
What's the question you'd most like to ask of the most powerful politician, the most innovative scientist, or the most talented musician? This is Melissa Block from All Things Considered, where we specialize in asking those kinds of questions every day. Your curiosity is our curiosity. A place to get answers every weekday afternoon, all things considered, from NPR News.
Weekdays from 4 till 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Scott McCulley, Executive Director of Planning and Student Placement at Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. He's the guy that helps or that guides the drawing of the lines and redistribution of student populations as the nature of the city changes and grows over time. Part of the problem with shifting some students from East Meck to the new Mint Hill High School, as I have read in the paper, and that's my whole source here, is that it would result in a large drop in East Mecklenburg's enrollment and a concurrent drop of about 30 teachers. They would be redistributed. Mm-hmm. Why, if overcrowding is bad, isn't undercrowding good? Because the school population would go from about, 3,100 to about 1,500.
Yeah, actually it's about 2,100.
Okay.
Down to about 1,500.
All right. Well, what's wrong with that? Why is that a bad thing?
Well, we view it as something that is it's certainly taken a positive step. We currently have 30 mobile units at East Mecklenburg High School. We'll be able to get the students in the core facility. Now, the reaction that we received last Thursday at the community meetings, and we certainly recognize and acknowledge this, is that any time that you contract a school, in other words, reduce its student enrollment, that impacts staffing and staffing allocations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different than what we went through last year with the budgetary process and eliminating positions. This is a reallocation of students. If teachers aren't at East Meck, then most likely they're going to be someplace else to, help with enrollment in another area. So certainly that, can provide for a pretty significant adjustment for some of our schools.
When you move students around and reduce school populations or rebalance school populations, particularly in the high school, there's a lot of loyalty and school spirit.
Absolutely.
There was when I was there. Maybe
absolutely.
It's not,
still is today.
Okay. So do you do it across the 4 years of the student population, or do you try to let juniors and seniors stay where they are and move the freshmen and sophomores around so they have a
right.
chance to rebuild that loyalty at a new school?
Yeah, our current practice is to give an opportunity for seniors to stay and finish out their senior year. For our brand new facilities, there is no senior class, so there is no choice. They have to stay. We have looked at this over the years, and we've done different things. We've had what we call the transition plan that allowed everyone to stay until they matriculate out of the school, if that's what they wanted. We had some transportation issues with that, and clearly we don't get the full impact of relieving the school when we have a transition plan. So we have basically said, look, if you're a senior, you can stay. If not, then you will be assigned to your new school, whatever that may be.
We have many emails and Facebook comments, and people have now begun to call in. So put your headphones on, and let's take some of those calls. And we'll begin with Grace in, of all places, Mint Hill. Hi, Grace.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have kind of a two-part question. First, you'd mentioned that several of the proposed plans for the Mint Hill Independence Butler situation could have worked well. And I'd like to know if one of those plans was the one that had been recommended by the Mint Hill community. And in addition to that, I'd like to know if that plan could have worked well, then what made the approved plan so much more appealing and so much better that it was worth disregarding the community's opinion?
Well, I don't think we disregarded the community opinion. At one point, we'd even presented that to the Board of Education. That came as I believe, a motion from one of the board members. So we had that prepared in terms of the map. And also the data as well. Our initial recommendation, which was made for the June 9th meeting, obviously had a little different plan, and it split the community. The board heard, from the community that keeping that Mint Hill area together was important. But they also were sensitive to Independence as well as Butler. And to the new school, and the feedback that we received that this was a more favorable plan in terms of assigning students to those respective schools.
Did that answer your question?
It, It does. I think that, you know, there's a lot of details that go into the planning, and I think that we all understand that. But I think that we forget the kids. And to imagine a child going to school for 3 years, developing those loyalties to their school, and then just being taken away from that school is, to me, it's a personal thing. I was separated from my sister in high school because of reassignment. And their solution was to pull my sister out of her high school and bring her to me where she knew nobody but me. So it's a frustrating thing for me. I think that we forget the kids and we think about adult situations. And where are these kids left? You know, 10 years down the road when they think back at their high school experience, what is that experience going to be for them?
Yeah, certainly. We acknowledge that this is very difficult. And I think you expressed that well, particularly for our high school students. They're in their last remaining years of school, and you're right, those are where those friendships are developed. School loyalty and athletic teams and other curricular activities are usually fostered and created during those times. That's why this is such a critical issue and important to get right. And I think the board did the right thing in terms of postponing that from June 11th to August 11th, June 9th to August 11th, to get some more feedback, to get some more information, to get this decision right.
Grace, thank you for your call. Let's stay in Mint Hill and go to Lynn. Welcome to the program, Lynn.
Hi. My daughter is an IB student at East Mac. We are actually, I live in Mint Hill, and we're actually slated to go to Independence, but for me it wasn't an option, just an observing what goes on at the school and with neighborhood kids' schools, and I think a lot of people in this area feel that way. I would like to know why it is that Myers Park is being completely left intact, and they think it seems to be okay to take Mint or to take East and reduce it by a third of the population, a third of the resources, a third of the teachers type scenario. And shouldn't that be done on a gradual basis?
Okay. Well, Myers Park was not in the list of schools, the initial list of schools that we had slated to impact. That list, Independence, Butler, and East Mac. And so when we came to the community, we were very clear that those were the schools that we set as parameters for impact. It wasn't until later that the board recognized that there might be an opportunity with Myers Park. Directed the staff to look at that opportunity, and we're in the midst of that right now.
Why wouldn't Myers Park be part of the original group of schools? Everything I've read about Myers Park is that it is overcrowded, and Linda has written an email to us that says, please ask Scott directly, is Myers Park High School overcrowded? We keep hearing that it works well at 3,000 students, but by CMS's own tables, Myers Park should be at or around 2,200. Why is there a need to right-size every other school but Myers Park?
All right. Well, clearly there's more students at Myers Park than can fit in the core capacity or core facility of the school. We have roughly 20 mobile units.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you have mobile units, the school is overcrowded in terms of being able to.
So why wouldn't they be targeted as part of those other high schools for redistribution of students?
Well, we had some real need in the east part of the community. We had a need to relieve those schools I just mentioned, and when you add additional schools to that, then you're basically diluting that, that ability to relieve those existing schools.
But how much of it is politics? How much of Myers Park is simply an untouchable situation because of politics?
Well, and I really can't answer that. I mean, my job is to prepare plans and
so there's no
certainly
pressure.
Options.
There's no pressure on your office for, as you look at these plans and design these plans to leave certain schools alone because of politics.
Right. At the staff level, there's not that level of pressure. We certainly work with our community. We work with our board. We present them with information and data. So at my particular level, we don't certainly get that kind of pushback. In terms of moving forward with this, and in our long-range master plan, we have identified specific schools for relief. And for the Myers Park West Charlotte, we've got a relief high school slated. Now, again, this is some time off, but we're looking in the next 6 years or so to provide a relief school. That is the number one Relief High School in this next bond referendum, whenever that may occur. So certainly there is a plan for relief from Myers Park as well as West Charlotte. And we do pair those. We group those in a way so that we can maximize relief for those schools that we have targeted.
Lynn, thank you for your call. We have an email here from Stan who says, Scott's got a tough job. Question. A lot of us are getting excited about the prospect of a neighborhood school in Dilworth. Seems like it would make a lot of sense to relieve Eastover's overcrowding and wouldn't involve some complex school swap. What are the prospects for a neighborhood school in Dilworth and for an expansion of neighborhood schools in general?
Well, I think that's certainly an option. We've put it out there as an option for discussion, is to move the arts program, which is a full magnet that's currently at Dilworth, to First Ward and establishing or reestablishing Dilworth as a neighborhood school. You know, we do have full magnets throughout our community at the elementary level. We have found that full magnets are the most successful in terms of using the magnet program. Does this mean that other full magnets will be converted to partial magnets or into neighborhood schools? I don't know. I don't anticipate that occurring, but certainly this is an opportunity to move a magnet program to an area or to a school that, you know, it may actually enhance the program.
And Melanie has a question along those lines from an email we have here. According to today's Observer, the main obstacle to moving the visual and performing arts magnet to First Ward Elementary School is the estimated cost of $750,000 to tear down the old school and expand the bus lot. Please ask Mr. McCulley, why is this needed for the magnet schools and not for the Eastover Dilworth First Ward boundary change?
Well, first of all, that is a project that has been in the works for some time. That's going to have to happen, is the demolition of that facility. And we're in actual need of additional space for playground, as well as for our buses in that area, regardless of what occurs with this plan. So that's certainly, that has been in the works for some time.
Another email from Geshaw in Charlotte. He says, how can you say Myers Park is overcrowded after reducing 35 teachers from Myers Park? That is proportionally much more than East Meck, where you have reduced about 15 teachers only. Overcrowding to me refers to teacher-to-student ratio. If you thought it's overcrowded, you should not have cut the teacher size.
Well, I think what he may be referring in that email is to the budgetary reductions that occurred last spring, and I don't have all of the data associated with that. He is correct in that we do use student-to-teacher ratio to calculate the capacity. So when there are more students per teacher, then the capacity of the school goes up. So he's absolutely correct in that particular statement.
Eileen, welcome to the program.
Yes. Hi. I'd like to pursue the Myers Park issue. I think it's somewhat disingenuous to call the Myers Park issue politics. I think what it really is the influence of wealth. And I don't think that's being dealt with candidly. We moved here 15 years ago when my daughter was an entering junior. Myers Park was so crowded that the students were eating lunch on the floor in the hallways. I don't know if that still exists now, but we ended up transferring her out and against my inclinations going to a private school because it was so overcrowded. And my understanding is the reason it isn't changing there is that the people who live in Myers Park and surrounding areas don't want anything to happen where their children will be bussed out. So that has a lot to do, I believe, with why that hasn't changed there.
And doesn't it also affect property values? In other words, if you suddenly find yourself out of Myers Park, wouldn't your home value possibly decline? Because there are instances where that is the case. Identical homes on two sides of a line are dramatically different in price because of where they're assigned to.
But other neighborhoods aren't given the same weight and the same consideration.
Well, property values are not in the guiding principles, and I have read anecdotally that is the case. When we look at boundaries, we're looking at solving a capacity issue, certainly we, as stated earlier, we're sensitive to the students, but the property value is an issue that we typically don't get involved in.
Aside from the property value, let's get off the property value for a minute. What I'm talking about is the overcrowding there, while no parent in Myers Park wants an overcrowded school, they don't want an equitable solution where their children might be bussed out just as children have been bussed in. And so other schools are targeted where Myers Park isn't, and I believe it's not unreasonable to think that wealth and influence are a consideration there, even if you're saying it doesn't come down to your level. It comes to somebody else's level.
That may be the case. I can state for what impacts me personally and my staff.
We're not asking what impacts you personally. We're asking why this is happening at Myers Park and trying to get to a more nuanced answer.
Is this a question that you are allowed to answer, or you would be in jeopardy if you answered, or is this a question better put to a member of the school board or members of the school board sitting around this table?
Right. Well, I think it's a question that's probably more appropriate excuse me, for either a member of our board or the superintendent or someone else who is certainly more involved at a different level. I can tell you at the staff level that that's not part of our consideration.
Eileen, thank you for your call. I hear her concern and her frustration,
yeah,
and you
absolutely.
Must hear it every day.
Absolutely. We hear that every day.
Is
absolutely.
It being heard up the line, do you think? Genuinely heard and listened to and reacted to?
Well, our board comes to the public engagement meetings. They hear what people have to say. They receive emails. Our superintendent receives these emails. So I'm certainly comfortable that they understand what the issues are.
Scott McCulley is Executive Director of Planning and Student Placement at CMS. I thank you for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is